Time now to bring you the AM News, which is sponsored by Palladium Residences. Now, in our first story, digital fraud is rising sharply in Ghana, with 97% of reported cases linked to payment service providers. Now, fintech experts warn that while the country has not reached a crisis point in public trust, the growing trend demands urgent policy action to safeguard Ghana's digital payment ecosystem. The warning emerged at the Maiden Digital Economy Forum, a thought leadership dialogue organized by Joy News and Habtel. My colleague Carlos Kaloni has more in the full report.
The Maiden Digital Economy Forum, organized by Joy News in partnership with Habtel, brought together key players in banking, fintech, cybersecurity, and consumers to examine the growing threat facing Ghana's digital payment ecosystem. Panelists warned that rising digital fraud could undermine trust in the sector if urgent policies and interventions are not implemented. Head of Internal Affairs at Habtel, Ebenezer Bafor, revealed that 97% of reported fraud cases are linked to payment service providers, even as fraud levels within traditional banking systems continue to decline.
We are going upwards. Looking at the report that was released recently, when you look at the reports, about 97% of the total fraud that happened is coming from fintechs or PSPs. That means that year on year, the banks seems to be going down, but fintechs or payment service providers are the ones going up. And when it comes to fraud, fraudsters are looking for the point where they can immediately target and quickly move away the funds.
For the Cybersecurity Authority, the biggest threat is not just technology, but the tactics used by fraudsters. The Deputy Director General for Technical Operations, Stephen Kujo Seshi, identifies social engineering through impersonation as the leading cybersecurity challenge.
Social engineering is probably the biggest driver of the reports we get. Because in each of the cases, most of the cases we look at, you would realize that there's been some form of trickery. We have impersonation. So we got one case about, even your own case about KFC. So yeah. Impersonation of brands is a key driver.
Head of Fintech and Innovation at the Bank of Ghana, Elhana Orekwasari, says keeping ahead of increasingly sophisticated fraud schemes requires stronger regulatory measures and coordinated action.
We need to continuously make sure that we manage to change behaviors. We manage to put in policies in place. Systems, I don't think that we have a problem. I think we have good structures to be able to protect the system. But how do you put in place a policy to prevent somebody from giving their pain out? Then it's going to be a matter of trying to have a situation where convenience had to pave way for security.
Right. The Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Association of Banks, John Iwa, also pointed to gaps between regulators and payment service providers, calling for deeper collaboration across the ecosystem.
We are moving towards convergence, but I 100% agree with you that there is a little bit of disconnect between how, as banks, we see the level of regulation and the oversight from the central bank vis-a-vis the requirements from the PSP side. Is if the possibility of some group of fintechs also assessing, their architecture to see where collaboration would provide a lot more value. So if it's about cybersecurity, is it possible for 5 or 10 fintech companies to come together and invest in one system that protects the 10 companies?
Economist Professor Gottfried Bockbin added that regulatory fragmentation must be addressed.
There isn't much coordination among the fintech. Either they see themselves as competing or whatever, but I think this is a bigger pie that is growing and all of that. So if they'll be able to come together, form an association and all of that, then perhaps they'll be able to share information.
With concerns over trusts and safety rising, industry players are pushing for urgent action to secure Ghana's digital payment future. For Joy News, Carlos Kaloni.
Now, the Food and Drugs Authority has so far temporarily closed 59 food facilities after uncovering breaches in safety and licensing requirements. It says non-compliant business risk fines of up to 30,000 cedis and possible prosecution. The affected facilities, including food manufacturing plants and cold storage facilities, were found operating below the standards required by the law. The FDA says the enforcement exercise, which is ongoing, is aimed at ensuring food producers comply with safety regulations and protect consumers. Evelyn Ampa has more in the following report.
The food on your table could be coming from facilities that fail to meet basic safety standards. The Food and Drugs Authority's enforcement exercise has uncovered breaches among food manufacturers, leading to the temporary closure of about 50 facilities over licensing, hygiene and safety concerns. Addressing the media after the latest enforcement exercise, Head of Communications at the FDA, Rhoda Appiah, says the inspections are part of efforts to ensure food producers meet the required safety standards.
We've closed down the food manufacturing facilities, 44 of them have been closed down. For cold storage facilities, we have over 15 that have been closed down within the space of 2 weeks. And a lot more will also continue in other parts of the country. So this is happening across board and we are not stopping anytime soon. We are doing this because the law requires us to be able to register facilities or license facilities before they will be able to produce any food product. Some of them do not have UV lights for any form of sterilization. The environment is unkept. Algae has taken over some of the pipelines and all. And so people take these products from the unregistered facilities and they face the risk of typhoid and all the other communicable diseases.
The authority says non-compliant businesses risk fines of up to 30,000 cedis.
You don't only face this kind of temporary closure, the impounding of your products, but even more, we are going to impose administrative charges on you. Some can go as high as 30,000 Ghana cedis.
The FDA says consumers also have a role to play in protecting themselves by checking that food and water products have been approved before purchase. For Joy News, Evelyn Ampa reporting.
Now, away from that, the Fisheries Ministry is pushing for the Cape Three Point Forest to be upgraded to a national park with permanent security to protect the coastal ecosystem from illegal mining. Sector Minister Emilia Atta warns the environmental destruction threatens biodiversity and the livelihoods of more than 3 million people who depend on fisheries and aquaculture. She made the remarks during the ministry's mid-year performance review.
Protecting our oceans today means providing more fish tomorrow. However, conservation efforts cannot succeed when other environmental threats undermine them. I must therefore express my deep concern about illegal mining activities in the Cape Three Points forest area, where polluted water is flowing into the marine environment around this important ecosystem. Such activities are unacceptable. They threaten our coastal communities, undermine our conservation investments, and place the future of our fishermen at risk. We must all recognize that protecting our fisheries is not only the responsibility of the Ministry of Fisheries and Aquaculture, it is a national responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, restoring fisheries resources requires more than declaring protected areas.
The people of Kokumba in the Bono East region can finally breathe a sigh of relief. After years of relying on unsafe stream water, a new borehole has been commissioned, bringing clean drinking water to their doorstep. The project, spearheaded by the Techiman South MP Martin Ejekosa, has been met with overwhelming joy from residents who say their daily struggle for water is finally over. Anna Sabit has more in the following report.
This is Kokoma, a land blessed with fertile soil for farming, yet cursed with a cruel irony. The very thing that sustains life has been the source of its slow poisoning. For decades, the people here have battled with danger every single day. They fetch water not from a tap, but from a stream that knows no treatment, no purification, only the endless cycle of contamination and sickness. The journey is long. The water is dirty, but the choice, there has never been one. We used to drink from the stream, and whenever we go to the hospital, they tell us our problem is from the water we drink, but we have no other choice. Our water source is far from this end. We walk long distances, and it is not safe for our health. Her story is not unique. It is the story of every mother in Konkomba, a community trapped between the ancient instinct to survive and the modern tragedy of preventable disease. The stream gives, but it also takes away. We can't continue drinking from an unsafe water source which exposes us to several illnesses. That is why we have to ask the member of parliament for support. Witnessing this hardship firsthand, the member of parliament for Techiman South, Martin J. Mensah-Kosa, declared the situation highly unacceptable. He made a promise to prioritize the essential needs of his constituents over politics.
This is the Konkoma community. They've been without water for a very long time. They have, over the years, depended on the source of water here, which is highly unhealthy. And I took it upon myself to work on providing them this water. So this is supposed to help them have clean drinking water and move away from the one that they have used over the years. And it's a very critical matter for them because they have had various health conditions or situations arising out of this water that they had used in the past. So this comes as a solution to a big problem over the years. And we've advised or implored them to take good care of it, make sure that they maintain it and continue to benefit from it over the years.
And then the earth surrendered. From deep beneath the parched soil, life erupted. Not a trickle, not a drop, a gushing fountain of pure, clean water. The sound that followed was not just cheers. It was the sound of chains breaking, the sound of a community set free. All we want to say is thank you to the MP. And if there is a name tag on our terms after voting, Jim Mensah-Kosa would have known that the people of Konkomba Line. For the people of Konkomba Line, the walk to the stream is now a memory. The fear of sickness is fading, and in its place, hope. Clean, abundant, life-giving hope. One boho, one MP, one community, but the ripple effects, they will flow for generations, because in the end, water is not just water. Water is life. Water is freedom. And today, Konkoma is free. Anna Sabit, Joy News.
Moving on, the Minister of State for Climate Change and Sustainability, Alhaji Baba Seydou Isifu, had described the erratic rainfall, prolonged dry spells and crop failures in the Upper West region as a threat to human survival, urging metropolitan, municipal and district assemblies to lead local climate action. He made the call through Climate Finance Officer Frank Nassam Agri at the stakeholder engagement in WA. Rafiq Salam has more in the full report.
This wasn't another workshop. This was a warning. Speaking through his climate finance officer, Frank Nansam Agri, Minister for Climate Change and Sustainability, Alhaji Baba Seydou Isifu said, erratic rains and dead crops are no longer weather. They are a threat to human survival. for Upper West farmers facing dry rivers and failed harvest, climate change is dinner or no dinner.
Climate change impacts are fundamentally local. Our response must be equally local. Local government authorities are on the front lines and represent our most powerful allies for building community resilience through targeted investments. Yet, we acknowledge the reality on the ground. Municipalities and districts across Ghana face serious climate action capacity gaps.
Our Power Solution Minister Charles Luongo Pozwing, through Planning Officer Ni Ajayi Lai, gave assemblies their marching orders. Stop treating climate change like environmental theory. Start treating it like an economic emergency. Put in your budgets or watch agriculture, the region's backbone, snap.
In the Upper West region, climate change is not a theoretical concept. It is experienced daily by the farmer whose planting season has become increasingly unpredictable, by the livestock farmers searching for pasture and water, by communities whose livelihoods are disrupted by prolonged dry spells and occasional flooding, and by our assemblies, which must continually repair damaged infrastructure with limited resources. These realities remind us that climate action is no longer optional. It is indispensable to our development aspirations.
The delegation then rolled out of the meeting venue, proceeded to the Kambale Water Runway in the Torres Hyrax flood zone, chronically affected by water overflow during heavy downpours. To mitigate the severe flooding that regularly threatens the community, a large drainage gutter was designed and constructed to redirect the water flow. However, the fault inspection revealed that this critical infrastructure initiative remains incomplete, leaving residents to extreme weather shock. Addressing the hurdles hindering such incomplete projects, technical director at the office of the minister, Cedric Zelu, shattered the misconception that climate finance is unavailable.
My DEX, the DEX that will be closely working with you, the director said that for those of you who can come up with bankable project initiatives, our office is established to facilitate that. And so it's my DEX that will be doing the calls and the meetings. But we have the capacity to say go to V20, to say World Bank, and say that this district in Nandong, in Bimbila, has come up with this project. And then we look at the frameworks and say that this organization can fund this project. We can lead you to that.
But there is hope. At Watia Amade Junior High School, trees planted over a decade ago are already changing the air. EPA Acting Apostle General Director Jonas Pereko says this is a model. Small, local, visible. No waiting for Accra. No 100-page reports. Just trees that cool a school. Now multiply that by every assembly.
This. But these smaller projects like this, they are not much into, if not some of the communities like the riparian communities and Ghana Land Restoration Project, the assemblies are not much interested. The one project that you can build them something they can point at. So our water bodies are all drying up. That's why we are trying to see.
We need parks. Some of this one qualifies for a very, in fact, the assembly can even beautify this and make it a more attractive and relaxing park for people to come and it can be created. Yeah, social events here, people can come and they will pay money.
For Upper West, the message is clear. The money is waiting. The heat is rising. Your assembly now holds the pen. Reporting for J News, Rafiq Salam.
Time now for our business update on the AM News with Samuel Kojo-Brace, their Hunter Paley.
This wasn't another workshop.
Well, let's do some business updates now. And public and AI, high utility cost and proliferation of foreign nationals in the informal sector are major expectations of businesses in the Central region, as Finance Minister Dr. Kasiela Tufosin prepares to read the mid-year budget review today. Now, speaking ahead of the themed year budget, Ashanti Regional Chairman of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, Anthony Opong, wants government to prioritize these concerns to bolster economic growth for local businesses.
Ahead of the mid-year budget, the Ghana Union of Traders of Ashanti Region want to commend the government for the stability of the local currency against our major trading partners' currencies, and then also the inflation. We think it's a plus to the government, and they have done well, and we commend them for that. But we think the aggressive moping system of the Bank of Ghana and the Ministry of Finance has robbed the public of every money in the system. So now there's low liquidity in the system, and there's low sales, and business thrive on sales. So while there's no sales, there's no business. The flat rate that he promised us, duties are very high this time because of the publican, the introduction of the publican AI system. Our duties are on the high side now. We want to hear something about it because we met them at Accra and they promised that they want to run it as a test on a temporary basis for the first 6 months and see how it will go so that we know how they are going to adjust it. So we hope now 6 months has been enough time for them to have come to the realization whether it's helping or not to give us some relief because we are really suffering under the duties of the AI Republican, yeah, the Republican AI. And then the routine charges, they are on the high side. For the first 1.5 years that the government has been in power, they've increased electricity by 128%. And water has gone up, transportation is on the high side, and it's affecting cost of doing business in this country. So we want the finance minister to talk about this, do something about it. And then there is the issue of foreigners, the influx of foreigners in the retail section. It's very, very bad. It's affecting almost every sector of our trading business in this country.
Now, the Bank of Ghana has warned that it will push for imprisonment and fines against persons and businesses that refuse to accept cedi and peso coins as payment for transactions. We've captured more in the following Business Desk report.
The Bank of Ghana, in a statement issued this morning, stated that the action does not only affect persons who refuse to accept these denominations, but those who deliberately encourage others to do the same. According to the central bank, it has been forced to issue this reminder following persistent and widespread refusals by some transport operators and businesses to accept these coins as payments for goods and services.
Well, that's all in Business Update. Back to you, Nicholas.
Thank you so much, Breeze, for bringing us the latest in business. And that's it for the AM show. The AM show is also sponsored. The AM news on the AM show is sponsored by Palladium Residences. Up next is Sports with Haruna Mubarak.
Media budget review in Parliament. Now, in November 2025, the Finance Minister stood before Parliament to outline government's plans and projections for the year, including several new policies and others already in progress. Now, we are more than halfway through the year. So how much progress has been made on these promises and projections? What has been achieved so far, and what new measures should we expect as the Finance Minister prepares to present the media budget review? Well, here on Beyond the Numbers, we will take you through everything you need to know ahead of tomorrow's presentation. I am Michelle Ajokum, and of course, Caleb Zulim is here with me. Happy Wednesday. The weather was looking some kind of way this morning. I was hoping, praying that we don't get rains like, you know, yes, the June,
I was hoping I'd get to win before the rain.
Well, I was waiting for no rain. You wanted it to. Anyway, but I mean, Caleb, one of the biggest concerns when it comes to the budget review is that viewers, audiences, Ghanaians are looking forward to governments coming to say, okay, we're spending according to plan. Just a few weeks ago, we're here looking at government expenditure, some sectors that were getting more attention than the others. But overall, can you say that there's been some productive spending in terms of the sectors?
So, I mean, we know the challenges the economy faced before 2024. So the new government, when they came in, they set up some a lot of fiscal controls. Mm. One of them is the authorization commitment that now goes to the Ministry of Finance. Every spending by any agency needs to get the finance ministry's approval. Mm-hmm. Again, you need to explain and explain to the ministry as to why you have to make some expenditure before you get approval. So we know that this is one of the things that's happening. The second leg is that the ministry or currently the government has a fiscal rule of about 1.5% of GDP. You have your primary balance needs to be 1.5% of GDP. This means that spending is very controlled. Now, if you look at the first quarter fiscals, and we spoke about this the last time, the first quarter, the government did not meet its expenditure.
Yeah.
If you look at where exactly the government made the expenditures, majority was the transfers, so that's to guest fund, some of the DACF and all the other NHIL and some of the statutory transfer that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And the next one was that government also made a compensation of employees, so they paid employees. Sometimes you can't say you're not going to pay your employees, so government also did that. But then if you look at the other leg of things, that's your goods and services, as well as your capital expenditure. Now, that's where the government fell short, especially with the capital expenditure. Now, for capital expenditure, majority of the shortfall came from our foreign capital expenditure, or the foreign-funded capital expenditure. Now, over the past weeks, we've seen reports from the World Bank and other development partners saying that the finance ministry is not allowing disbursements. So, majority, for instance, the Gari project, that's also under capital expenditure because you need to build some drains and all of that. Because the finance ministry did not approve some disbursements, we fell short on the capex side of things. So most of the foreign funded capex, we fell short of it, I think about 40% if you do the math. But then the entire capex, so we fell short. But then if you look at the big push line item, government almost met target, which is a good thing for the big push project. So if you say government's not spending, I mean, well, they decided to spend in some areas, but then some of the other factors like the CAPEX, goods and services, and arrears clearance, that's where the shortfall came in. So hopefully we might see sometimes some of these expenditure items, sometimes the government decides to spend it at the latter part of the year. So we might see that maybe in the latter, on the second half of the year, the government will now make some of these payments, contractors that are being owed, they pay them later in the year. So that's where we are really seeing things so far. But then again, revenue, we did better as compared to last year, but then we still fell short of the first quarter targets. So again, we have to see how the government is reconciling these things. We know the VAT was restructured, and hopefully that was supposed to broaden the tax base and then get more people to pay VAT. But then if you look at the line items, the imports VAT and then the taxes from the import side really fell short of the target. So again, we'll have to see what the government is doing about this within the mid-year budget review that's going to be announced tomorrow.
Well, talking about what government is going to do about this, well, George Riafe has joined us here. And let me just move straight to you, George. It's good to have you on the show. Well, we're looking at the mid-year budget review, and a lot of times when we look at government expenditure, and just like Caleb mentioned, we look at the revenue mobilization as well. It hasn't been great as compared to our expenditure, what we were looking at spending. Do you think there's any likelihood of maybe additional taxes, maybe renewed taxes of the existing ones we have, like some additions or some cuts downs on our expenditure?
Go with the classical presentation of a media budget review. You will look at the budget being, and why is the minister doing this? The budget is presented in November, 2 months before the actual financial year.
Yeah.
And the financial data is based on data ending September 2025. So when you get to that actual year, you have the full end year numbers, which again would impact on your macroeconomic targets.
Yeah.
And so half year, the Financial Administration Act actually requires the finance minister to appear before the House and update them in terms of these numbers, whether based on having seen about 8 months after the budget was presented, do you still want to stick to those macroeconomic numbers going forward again in terms of expenditure, in terms of revenue? So those are the classical things that we always look out for, or why the minister is doing this. In previous instances, we've seen where there have been a supplementary budget. It's a situation where revenue is not doing well, and they have their guys there who would want to extrapolate and project and say that based on the way things are going, you need to move these taxes here, adjust these taxes here, and all those things. So if we want to stick to that classical mid-year review of the estimates in the budget, then you wouldn't hear anything about taxes and all those things. But if things are looking that bad in terms of the revenue, and if you extrapolate and you see that based on maybe things improving and the measures that have been introduced working, then maybe the minister might be forced to see whether they can hide behind certain levies or taxes. As we speak right now, and don't forget that the minister is supposed to do a presentation to cabinet and all those things.
Yeah.
We haven't heard anything from government sources about any taxes or levies being reviewed. But if revenue is not doing well as at now, and it is likely not going to change going forward, then there might be some cutback again in terms of expenditure. Because the argument also being that even though government itself is celebrating and they've been putting into the expenditure, some also argue that the revenue numbers are not good. So if you're not making enough revenue and just coming from an IMF program also, you want to send some signals that you are capable of managing your economy. So if revenue is not doing well, the best thing to do is to cut back. But again, you've heard from some people or some party members that, listen, we need jobs. You heard some from Ghanaians that we need to train for our economy, Women's Bank and all those things. Government has to expand. Government has to do things to expand the economy. Where is revenue going to come from? Is it going to come from the same revenue or you may have to borrow? The minister, classical actor Forson, has given the signals that he's not interested in going out to borrow money to finance the budget and all the rest. Weather pressures might see him changing that stance. We might get some signals here. So I'm just trying to give some two scenarios that if the minister wants to go with that classical media budget review, then don't expect any new thing. This is not a budget presentation. He's just coming in to review the estimates, the macroeconomic numbers. But if things are that bad, and going forward, you need to look at something about the road construction, the, how the weather and the flood situation has exposed our road network. Some money is needed. Gold is doing well. But going forward, can gold still be the driver of bringing the required revenue or not? Bank of Ghana's reserves has gone down by more than 1.2 billion. That means that going forward, the Bank of Ghana is going to hold back in terms of its intervention to support the city. So he's caught in between hard rock and the deep blue sea. What is he going to do? So again, too early days yet. We have picked some information, but knowing how these things pan out, you don't want to stick your neck out and say that Atufosun is going to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Things can even change even a minute to the presentation.
I'm sure by now there are new budget revisions going on at the Ministry of Finance as we speak. But then, again, like George said, you know, speaking from the getting additional revenue or getting loans to support the budget, we know that the government says they're not really going to the external market yet.
That is the portion of...
That's the posture,
At the Forson.
I
don't think that it's a whole government decision. There are some who think that looking at the improved macro numbers, it is time to go out and raise funds to finance the budget.
Yeah. If you look at the government or the finance ministry's debt projections for the next quarter, that's July to September, they put in there that they might come for domestic bonds. So you might see an additional bond issuance before September ends. You know, we got the first one at the 7-year
But Killer, there's a critical question about whether the local economy
is ready,
can support all these funding that they want to raise as well. Don't forget as well, the cocoa board is also going to come in as well. Do we have the funds? If you speak to some pension managers, some fund managers, they've argued that they're looking for places to invest. But will these funds be enough to finance all these things? We can go with the portion that Ghanaians can do it. But the reality on the ground also is that you don't want to crowd out the private sector. If government decides to come in to borrow for cocoa board, borrow for infrastructure projects, what about the private sector as well? And that is where I see the minister again being caught up in a very difficult position about how do you free the domestic space for you and I and the private sector to borrow. So if the international market is an avenue, maybe in terms of philosophy, he might not be for it. But the reality is that he might be forced to do that.
Well, let's look at, I mean, we've had conversations about the macroeconomic outlook, and we all agree that the government has done some good work. But how realistic are the Ghanaian, the ordinary Ghanaian people feeling it?
Well, that's the real sector. We keep speaking about how this is going to affect the real economy. And I think one of the major measures of how government actions affect the real economy is with your spending on capex and goods and services, because the other expenditure items don't really affect the economy. I mean, there's a way it will affect the economy in the long run, but then for direct access to the real economy, you need to focus on your capex and your goods and services. Now, these two line items, for the first quarter, the numbers are on the finance ministry's website, the government did not meet their targets. So again, some of these things reinforce the, you know, the arguments people say that, well, government is spending, but they're not spending in the right areas because the spending that needs to drive up economic activity, we are falling below the projection that were made. Again, speaking about these things, you need to understand that you only spend what you make in revenue. And this is what Joel was speaking about when he said that, well, if your revenue is not doing well, either you cut back on your expenditure or you find additional revenue elsewhere, that's through loans and all of that. So we know the finance minister's position on, you know, getting on external additional debts. And that's even why sometimes some of the World Bank funded projects and some of the multinational institutions, their projects, the finance minister does not want to draw down too much because that's also adding to our debt stock. And this morning we heard that our debt stock had gone up by about 47 billion.
Yeah.
But majority of that was also because of the exchange rate movement. I think about 28 billion
right.
was from the exchange rate movement and only 19 billion for actual fresh debt, which is in line with the finance ministry's about 15 billion every 3 months. So I think additional debt at this point is really not something that the fiscal authorities are looking at. But then again, we might be surprised tomorrow when the budget is read. Maybe the minister might indicate as to the local bond that they are looking forward to within the next quarter. Hopefully, we might see some indications from the minister there. But then, to answer your question again, for us to feel the impact on the ground and for businesses and the market women to feel the impact, spending needs to be directed towards CAPEX and goods and services. And then we are not meeting the target yet.
I think that one of the biggest challenges that maybe at the force might be dealing right now may have to do with posturing philosophy and the reality. And also government trying to make a case about the fact that they can manage this economy. One, you're dealing with the previous administration and trying to show that, listen, when it comes to us, we are better managers of the economy. Just coming out of an extended credit facility program as well, the signal that you want to send across about you can manage the economy. The reality is that you can starve yourself to have a good body, to show to the those who are auctioning for models for maybe Miss World or something. But the reality is that, is that starving yourself giving you an ulcer or not? So outwardly, the numbers could show that, yes, you're doing good. But are you again developing another medical challenge that could worsen your situation? Because there are still a lot of people who are pushing for jobs. They are pushing for our road networks and all the rest. You need money to finance it. If you start spending, what could be the impact of that on inflation? What could be the impact again on your budget numbers when it comes to overruns, deficit, and all the rest? You've set a very high target for yourself, trying to show the international community that, listen, we can manage our economy even without the IMF. So there's the posturing bit, there's the philosophy bit, there's the political economy signals you want to send, and the reality on the ground that as a developing economy, you need to spend to stimulate growth. And these are the things that he'll be battling with if he meets with his cabinet people in trying to see what should be the way forward, whether you want to go with a classical media review and just come and say that growth, you think that growth will do this, we are done, we go. Or look out for an opportunity to do a supplementary budget, which I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. Or look at a situation where you have to do some things to improve the regional situation in terms of revenue. So this is what I think he might be battling with right now in terms of dealing with all these things, fund program, pressures from Ghanaians, pressures from party people saying that we need jobs and all the rest. How do you need jobs? This is a classical economy where a government has to spend to stimulate growth. And even spending in the right sectors, where are you going to get the money from?
Well, having said all of these things, George, so I'm asking, is this fiscal, the position of the finance minister to ensure that there's some amount of level of fiscal discipline, is it the right, like, I mean, the level of fiscal discipline, is it the right level of fiscal discipline? Because regardless, we still need some spending as well.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Where is the money going to come from? There are economic theorists that believe, or some economic classical theory that believe that as a developing economy, you need to spend. You cannot go with an aggressive fiscal consolidation to get the required results for an economy like Ghana. And you have to do something about it. That's something that there is nothing wrong. But again, there are immediate shocks when it comes to spending and long-term shocks when it comes to spending. Looking at what is happening in the Middle East and all those things, it appears that things might not be good for us going forward. I think that it is something he'll be struggling right now to see what would be the best approach going forward. You can keep the brakes and have the inflation still being single digit, but it is not creating the jobs that you want. And again, don't forget that We are a year away going to election.
Yeah.
There's a challenge of the fiscal discipline to ensure that we are not hit by the election curse, mm-hmm. where we spend at nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And also to ensure that, listen, how do I keep a good report card to present to the electorate in an election year?
Yeah.
So, listen, I don't want to be a finance minister at this time because listen, it is a tough time for the minister if you want to be real, if you want to be practical, and also an economist will say, there is the political economy that you have to do it.
Yeah.
Also, Minister of Finance.
Well, Caleb, ahead of tomorrow, what are the three biggest statements that you're looking out for from the Finance Minister?
Well, I think the first one I'm looking out for is the primary balance rule. Now, that was adjusted by the new government to 1.5% of GDP. Now, that's very high. Mm-hmm. If you want to be spending, it shouldn't be 1.5%. But then again, this is one of the things that's really locked the hands of the government and the finance ministry, because you need to meet that rule within the amended PFM, the act that was amended by the finance ministry. So again, the IMF is also in town. They are about to release their staff level agreement. I think it should be out somewhere next week. The IMF is also saying that probably the government can't consider lowering the rule from 1.5 to about 0.5%,
mm-hmm.
and you still meet your debt to GDP targets, because we're already within that band anyway. So I think hearing an indication from the ministry tomorrow that maybe at the end of this year we might, you know, tweak the fiscal rule from 1.5% to now 0.5%.
Mm.
That's going to free up the finance ministry and they can spend more, which is what everybody is calling out for. The next thing will be to understand their debt framework for the rest of the year, whether they are going to, you know, get more domestic debts, mm-hmm. issue more domestic bonds, whether cocoa board is also coming through, and how that's going to be introduced into the market. And finally, also how the government is going to do their new economy.
Yeah.
You know, we had indication that the media budget is going to touch on that. I was expecting it to be in the main budget in 2027,
mm-hmm.
but then we had indication that that might come within the media budget. So again, how the government...
I think, Kelly, you're right on that, because again, mm-hmm. there are also indications that we picked up from some of our colleagues at the DEX saying that maybe we may not have the minister speak about the new economy thing in this media budget, but it could happen in the main budget. The president will talk about it. So
okay.
There's still